Today, we're all looking for ways to save. That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and monitors your medical claims as they come in, then flags any hidden errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds, and Hunter Biden is now suing over his stolen laptop. We have an all-star lineup today. Former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, tells us what she makes of this congressional class. Then we'll talk to Senator Patty Murray about her unique position in the Senate. But first, we will talk to former Vermont governor and presidential candidate Howard Dean. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Howard Dean.
Thank you for having me on.
Very excited to have you. I wanted to talk to you about the continual decline of the Republican Party. I mean, what is happening?
Well, I don't think it's a decline. I think they've simply become an authoritarian party modeled after what the Russians are doing or what the Hungarians are doing or the Poles are doing. What it is a decline of one of the two major parties in the United States of America. It's a decline in the interest of democracy. But I think they remain very dangerous for the country and for the future of America.
What you're saying is interesting and something I have not heard quite articulated this way. Can you think this was sort of Newt Gingrich to Donald Trump, or do you think this started before that?
No, I think Newt started it. There's always been, right-wing crackpots in the Republican Party, the John Birch Society and all these kinds of stuff. That's been going on since the 40s and 50s. But this is the first time that the crackpots have taken over the party. And it's very scary. I mean, DeSantis, who's pretending to run for president, is an out-and-out racist. I mean, it was bad enough for Glenn Youngkin to run around Virginia with his nice fleece on, talking nice, and then talking about CRT in the public schools, which, of course, doesn't exist in any public school in America. That was racist. But DeSantis makes no bones about it. If you teach Black history, you're denigrating white people. Well, it's pretty clear who he's appealing to. And he's one of the front runners for the nomination in 2024. So we're really at a crossroads here. There are people of principle in the Republican Party. The problem is most of them lack courage.
Yeah.
And that's a disaster for the United States.
That does sound like a very accurate assessment. I want to just drill down on this for a second. Do you think this happened because the Republican Party is so profoundly weak? And they just couldn't stand up to Trump? Or do you think they just decided to make this deal with the devil?
I think it's a combination. They are weak. They have lost their connection with average Americans. So they rely on what fascists rely on, which is grievance politics. It really does sound like Hitler when he starts talking, except instead of about Jews, it's about blacks and women. Take away women's rights, take away black rights. They shouldn't have had them in the first place, and or the Mexican rapists and all that kind of stuff that Trump was talking about. Although it did sort of start with Gingrich when he decided that the way to take power was to blow up your opposition and to demonize them. And of course, you know, you fight fire with fire. So that's what's really split the country apart. That didn't start with Trump, but Gingrich laid the groundwork for Trump to emerge 20 years later.
One of the things you've been really involved in is trying to help Democrats win, right? Like win every state. Do you think there's an opportunity here for Democrats to pick up these non-zealotous, more normal voters?
Well, yes, because there's only so much market in a true democracy for racism and bigotry. You will get a significant number of people, but you won't get the majority unless there's real hardship or it appears that the Democrats are out of touch. I think Biden, one of Biden's much overlooked qualities is that he is sort of everyman. He is a working class guy and relates to that. And I think, you know, he is old and all that stuff, but people recognize in the working class, enough people recognize that he is a decent human being. Warnock and Ossoff would not be in the Senate today if it hadn't been for Donald Trump. I think there were enough Republicans, particularly Republican women, that just couldn't stomach the bigotry and the nastiness. And that's, of course, now percolating down. DeSantis is about to run a candidacy based on bigotry and nastiness. He has, I can't think of a single positive thing that he's talked about or done, but he was reelected by a huge margin, although against a very weak candidate.
Yeah, a weak candidate, but also a weak party structure. And you have been very involved in party structure. Part of your career has been at the DNC. So explain to us how you fix that.
Well, Florida has been a particular disaster for as long as I can remember. When I was at the DNC, it is. It's very balkanized. It's all about the donors. There are even state laws that make it difficult for both parties in terms of how officers get appointed. It is a disaster. And it's also an old people's state.
Right.
And my generation, sadly, has gone from the generation that fought for civil rights and against the Vietnam War to a 60% Trumpist. Or some horrible number like that. I mean, the boomers are now have given up any idealism that we grew up with. And of course, what state has more boomers than anybody else? Right. So Florida is going to be really hard to reorganize. We didn't organize it very well. One of the greatest feats that Obama did when he won the election was to win Florida. He had to put his entire organization in there, and the guy that ran it was the guy that ran the DNC for him, you know, after he won the nomination. And he went down to Florida and won Florida for Obama. But they had to set up an entire organization that was parallel.
Yeah, who was it who ran for?
I can't think of his last name. His first name was Paul, and I can't remember his last name. But he was also the guy that engineered Obama's win in Iowa in the primary, which set him on the road to the presidency.
Right. Florida is a special case, but then we open ourselves up to also New York State, which had become a out-of-nowhere disaster. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That was just the usual New York self-absorption. I mean, they're always, you know, New Yorkers are always about themselves. And then
Thank you.
A particularly awful chairman who was, I mean, you know, the DCCC has not distinguished itself for a long time, even though Nancy was probably the greatest speaker in the history of the United States House. You know, and New York, so they had a chairman from New York who...
Jay Jacobs, who sucks.
Oh, yeah, no, yes, but the DCCC was from Jay Jacobs shouldn't be there, but...
Right. DCCC
chair, Sean Patrick Maloney,
yeah.
Who jumped out of his race into somebody else's district because he got redistricting, and then lots of money, and then he focused all on his own race, and then, you know, New York just can't get out of their own way because they're so Democratic that they all fight among themselves. I mean, a perfect example is the example of Dan Golden. So Dan is, you know, he's going to be a good congressperson. He got elected with about 26% of the vote because there were five progressives that fought among each other and all ran in the primary. I mean, This is the kind of stuff that kills the Democratic Party. You know, the idea is to sit together and actually work something out instead of going on your own trip. I always say that Congress is like, or Washington in general, is like middle school on steroids. They're smart, they're hardworking, and they're 13 years old. It's all about them all the time. And sort of New York politics is like that too.
Yeah, no question. I mean, do you think that New Yorkers can get it together for 24?
I hope so, because Kirsten Gillibrand's going to run again, and I think she's a terrific senator. And she probably will run against Zeldin or somebody like that, so it won't be an easy race.
Right. It does seem to me like there's a chance, if Democrats get their shit together, that they could win back the House through New York.
Absolutely right. And what we need is, I don't know who the new D-Trip chair is. We need really somebody who's strong with a national picture instead of somebody who's focused on their own race.
The thing that Sean Patrick Maloney did, which was like baffling, was the day before his vote, he went on Meet the Press.
Well, he should never have been appointed to that job in the first place. That was just really bad judgment.
Yeah.
The New York Assembly has some blame here because they kept spitting back the same redistricting plan that the court told them they couldn't have. So what a surprise. The court did something else. And that was the, you know, I mean, they could have made some compromises. This is, look, for all New York's faults, it's not North Carolina where the court is just does whatever, you know, or Wisconsin where you have a you know, right-wing court and they are basically just politicians, just like the Supreme Court. New York has a functioning government. And so to lose the seats there was just inexcusable. But part of it was the assembly's fault because they kept stuffing the list back and thought they were going to run over the judiciary. Well, you just don't run over the judiciary, and you're not supposed to run over the judiciary in a democracy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Democrats sort of got too overconfident with the redistricting and it bit them.
Oh, you mean in New York?
Yeah, in New York.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. I don't know what they were thinking, but they weren't clearly thinking.
So I want to talk to you about this national picture for a minute. The House belongs to Republicans. If Democrats get their shit together, they could, because there are a lot of districts that are Biden districts that that Democrats could win back. But then there is this very fakakta, that's the medical term, Senate map for 24. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, that'll be very hard for us. Hanging on to the Senate will be hard. I think we're going to do it, but it's going to be very difficult. We're going to need to replace people like Stabenow. I think we can do that in the Democratic side. Tester's going to be hard. If he runs again, it's going to be a hard seat to hold, although he's the best person for that job. He gets Montana. The one thing that we have in our favor is Montana is not a state of crackpots. And that's right. Mostly what they have in the legislature and the Congress, I mean, is crackpots. So at some point, if we run a very moderate, thoughtful person like John Tester, if he chooses not to run, I think we have a shot at that seat. People get sick of this right wing nut stuff, the ones that aren't sucked into it. And, you know, it with the way the Germans were in 1935. So, you know, and I think the economy is getting better.
Yeah.
Has done what he said he's going to do. So I think that's going to be helpful to us. But you're right, it is a tough map.
One of the spots that is going to be particularly complicated is Arizona. It looks like the Trumpy candidates are going to get in there. So that's good. But you really could be looking at a three-way race there.
Oh, there will be a three-way race. I mean, Gallego is a good candidate. He's not going to get to 50%. And the question is, who is Sinema going to take votes for from moderate Republicans or Democrats? And I don't know the answer to that. And there will shortly, I'm sure, be some polling. I expect Carrie Lake to run for the Senate. And, you know, that will be a very hard one for us.
Yeah. Carrie Lake has only gotten crazier since she lost.
That's true. But she did get about 49% of the vote. So,
yeah,
you know, that tells you something about the state of Arizona. But they have a great senator in Mark Kelly, you know, somebody who was not a great campaigner, but turned, I think, is going to be a terrific governor. And that's going to be very helpful.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But Arizona is going to be on hard times because of water. And when people get on hard times, they sometimes do irrational things at the polls. So I'm concerned about Arizona.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I mean, I do think we are really seeing climate stuff happening right in front of our eyes in a way that, I mean, I think 24 climate will take center stage on a lot of things.
I do too. And I think that's going to be very helpful to the Democrats because the Republicans are still pretty much climate deniers.
Eventually, do you think this fever dream breaks and Republicans, I mean, decide that they're going to pivot back to pretending not to be insane?
The only way for that to happen is for them to lose. And that's the scary thing. I mean, the country is really at a crossroads. We could tip over into an authoritarian state. We have a court that's corrupt that was put there by billionaires through the Federalist Society that are essentially doing the bidding of the right wing. We have a party that doesn't respect democracy and democratic institutions and is making excuses for people who stormed the Capitol and killed some police officers. When you get people like that as one of the two major parties in America, America is at a crossroads and there's no guarantee we're going to recover. That's what everybody's working really hard for, particularly the 17 to 25 year olds who are doing a terrific job, except for their voting percentages. They need to get up quite a bit.
Weren't you heartened by these midterms?
Yes, very much so. It seemed like a country that was coming to its senses.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking about the Senate. If Biden runs again, I believe he's going to win if his health stays good, even against DeSantis, who's not a very attractive candidate. And his views, of course, are just antediluvian. He's already catering to the worst elements of the Republican Party. It's going to be hard for him to come back from that. I'm an optimist, but this is very, very serious. And we could tip over into what would end the United States as we know it.
Yeah, I think that's really important to keep that in the focus. What are you watching just now? I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening that's sort of off the radar, but important, like what's happening in Wisconsin, you know, the sort of off-year election stuff. What are you watching?
I'm watching the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. That's very, very important. I'm watching some court decisions that are getting made around the country about some of the election fraud that's going on the Republican side, or the attempted election fraud. So far, the courts have mostly resisted it. I'm watching some of the corruption in places like the Georgia legislature, where they have already passed Jim Crow laws and are essentially the new disguised Jim Crow. And I've sort of given up on Florida. I think Florida is just going to have to, just seem to want to collect people that aren't going to be with where the majority of Americans are.
I mean, a lot of those people did move there to be together.
Right. So maybe they should all be sequestered in Florida. I don't know.
I mean, they have definitely, they're making each other more right wing.
And let's not forget, this is not confined to DeSantis. They have a senior senator who Rick Scott, who was indicted, right? His company was indicted and eventually found guilty of cheating the government, Medicare, of $1.5 billion. I mean, these are the people that are being elected by the people of Florida to serve them. You can't just blame the politicians there. There's something the matter with going on in Florida there.
Well, it's very hot.
Yes.
And very humid. It's got to be the weather. But yeah, this is all really important. I just am curious, one last thing, which is, in speaking of Florida, there is this College Board thing where DeSantis is targeting African-American AP history. The College Board is going along with it. I mean, what is the recourse here? I mean, it just seems unconscionably, it's A, ridiculous, but do you think there's any sort of recourse for the Biden administration here?
I have no idea. That's a legal question. The College Board has always been pretty craven. I mean, those people are in the people who do the testing and all that, it's all about the money for them. So, in fact, I think it's great that a lot of these universities are not bothering to take those tests anymore. I think the African-American history in high schools is very worthwhile. It's an important part of our country's history that's never been taught properly, and it is beginning to be now. I think what the College Board is doing, watering down the course, is not critical. I don't think we should get in a big fight about that, because the truth is the teachers are going to teach that course the way they want to teach the course, not the way the AP people tell them they have to. So although obviously isn't going to get taught in Florida, I'm sort of almost ready to give up on Florida. I mean, firing the school board members, firing the superintendents who are very popular among the parents.
Yeah.
If the Florida people don't get their act together and get rid of these nutcases, I mean, Florida has now become one of the most corrupt legislatures in the United States. It's a disaster, and it's a big state. It's an important state. But I just scratch my head and think, what the hell is going on down there? What is going on with this voting?
I have one last question for you. You are a doctor. We are coming through, hopefully, again, with bearing some other mutation, this pandemic. Are you disappointed that Republicans used this as a way to divide people and that there wasn't more coming together?
Yeah, of course I am. I mean, look, but those were the Republicans that, you know, would be happier in Hungary or Poland.
Right.
I mean, these are not Democrats and they're barely Americans. It's the same technique they use on race, the same technique they use on gay people. You isolate people, you make them feel aggrieved, you make them feel like violence is okay. Even though you supposedly don't condone it. Very fine people on both sides. When you're talking about the Nazis protesting against the march in anti-racist march in Charlottesville. I mean, that's what parties who are in authoritarianly inclined do. This is an authoritarian party, and they're in a battle for the soul of their own party. They're not going to win that battle internally. We're going to have the way to do it is what I call reduction of cognitive dissonance. You show them that this is a losing proposition for them and is a losing proposition for their voters. And when the voters get wise and the Republicans get wise, they'll come back. But as we saw in Germany in the 30s and the 40s, there's no guarantee that they're going to come back without self-destructing or destroying the whole country.
Yeah. Howard Dean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Today, we're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. When I first heard about it, I thought, it's about time. This makes sense. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and monitors your medical claims as they come in for savings. Let's say you, your spouse, or kids see the doctor or other medical provider when your claims come in, HealthLock automatically renews them and flags any errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. So you pay only what you owe. This is your money, your saving. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped members save more than $130 million. I get it. Medical billing errors can happen, but you should be able to pay with confidence. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden medical bill errors. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's healthlock.com.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Nancy Pelosi is the former Speaker of the House and represents California's 11th District. Welcome to Fast Politics, Representative Nancy Pelosi.
Thank you, Molly. I'm very excited to be with you. I've heard wonderful things, and I'm both very much looking forward to being on.
Well, we're delighted to have you. So I wanted to ask you, one of the many times I wanted to have you on this podcast was when I was watching the C-SPAN coverage, and you had written down all of the numbers, and you had calculated that Kevin McCarthy did not have the votes.
He didn't until he did. But the fact is that it was a mystery to all of us as to why all of that wasn't done, shall we say, behind doors, so that his eventual election as speaker would be clear to the public. What we were talking about with the numbers is that if you have X number of presents, then you need fewer number of yeses. But you can't have too many presents because the Democrats have more yeses. So again, it's complicated. What actually happened at the end, because I was sitting there, when the Republicans said they wanted to adjourn, and we voted no because we thought that the public should, we should have a Congress that was functioning, that our members should get sworn in, that we could engage staff, and that we could be a Congress of the United States. So just get your act together and get this done. They said, they were saying, yes, they wanted to adjourn and hold it over until the next week. And we said, no, get it done now. But what happened then, one of their no votes came forward and said, it's okay, on the next vote, I'll be with you. I'll be present or whatever. I'll be an okay vote. On the next vote, I'll be okay. So then immediately, Kevin said, okay, everybody, vote no on adjournment. So that's what happened. They didn't. They would have gone into the weekend with nothing except one of theirs then said, I'll be with you. Anyway, it would be inevitable that there would be a Republican Speaker of the House. So it was just a question of time. Get it done. I was hoping Kevin could get it done on the first ballot. What is it they need? What do you have to do? Just get it done. But anyway, I was showing the members how you can't keep getting presents, people voting present and no, and have it add up to a majority of the members of Congress.
I read a story once about the kind of vote whipper you were when you were speaker and how you would double, triple, quadruple check to make sure that you had the votes.
Yeah.
It feels like, I mean, McCarthy has brought a bunch of things to the floor, a few of which have not passed, which he had tried to, you know, he got Ilhan Omar kicked off a committee. That was, I guess, he was very pleased with that. I mean, do you just watch it in sort of like, how is he doing it this way? And why is he not more careful with the vote whipping?
Well, I think he's getting the majority vote on the floor, but it's not something that's going to pass in the Congress of the United States. It's just not going to pass in the Congress. It's not going to become the law of the land. And again, what is the important use of time there in order to move us forward? We have important work to do. I don't think that at this point he will fail to get the Republican votes he needs for some. When he gets serious about the legislation, we'll see. But on some of these, so we say, messages that he's putting out there, he probably will continue to have the votes. But who knows? I mean, he only has a five-vote margin. One person, sadly, is not well. So there's a four-vote margin, and that's tough.
If you had Santos, if Santos had been a Democrat, he never would have been. But if he had been, would you have pushed him to resign? I mean, McCarthy thinks this vote helps him, but it has continually been such an embarrassment.
Well, he's an embarrassment. Question is, are these people embarrassed? I mean, quite frankly, he may be an embarrassment, but some of their members are a danger to the American people. To watch what is happening on the Republican side is really sad. This is the grand old party. I keep telling Republicans, take back your party. This isn't who you are. You've done great things for America. You've had great presidents of the United States. And now you look like a punchline. You look like a joke. But again, his behavior is such that it does not bring dignity and respect to the to the House of Representatives. And that is a rule of the House, that your behavior should not bring disrespect to the House. So he's already violated that. Whether he has violated the law in terms of campaign contributions, whether he has, I think, two things. All the things they talk about, enhancing his resume, all that stuff, terrible. But what really matters is, did he break the law? Did he violate the rules of the House? And did he commit hubris by associating himself in a way that wasn't true with the Holocaust? We hold that in a very special place. And clearly he did not. I don't spend a whole lot of time on him because, again, he's not a legislative danger at the moment. I think it's a shame that he is in Congress. I think it's a shame on the Republicans that he's there. But again, they have a good deal of shame going on their side of the aisle.
In New York State, I'm in New York City, actually. We've had a really not great run in these midterms, despite the fact that Democrats had an amazing run everywhere else.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, you know a lot about sort of the party and how to get it done. What are your thoughts about New York State?
Well, let me just say about the election writ large. I kept telling people all along, all over the country, campaigning for candidates or making speeches to a broader audience or raising money, whatever, that we were going to win. I said, do not pay attention to any of these pundits who are sitting someplace in D.C. deciding they know what's going on in the rest of the country. Our candidates came forth after January 6th. They came forth with patriotism, with courage, and with confidence that they could win. They knew why they were running and they were determined to win. So I felt very confident that we could hold the House. Others said, oh, no, you have the wrong message and you're this and that. And I said, no, we don't have the wrong message. Oh, your message is in the rearview mirror. No, it isn't. We know our districts. Our candidates know their districts. We had a clear distinction between Democrats and Republicans in terms of the contrast about who was for lowering the cost of prescription drugs and who was there with pharma, to use one example, who was there for women's right to choose and who was there to criminalize a woman's right to choose in the country. And so people knew in their districts the importance of democracy, the importance of our freedoms, the importance of kitchen table issues like the cost of prescription drugs. And they were doing very well in their districts, even though the punditry, even the Democratic punditry was saying, oh, you don't have it wrong. We were saying to them, please don't talk about something you don't know about.
Yeah.
So we felt pretty good about our races. 10 days before, 2 weeks before New York started to show weakness at the statewide level, and all the focus was then to win the governorship, which was very, very important to do. But it did come at the expense of our races on Long Island and in the Hudson Valley. And that was most unfortunate. To Hakeem, you could be speaker in this term.
Yeah.
You never know. You don't know with all the things that are going on. But we certainly have the capacity to win it in 2024. I hope it is a lesson learned for some who think they know what's going on in races that they have no knowledge of, that they are second guessing how we have chosen the messages for the district. Not us, but candidates who believe they can win, who know what works. And all of these are consistent with our values and our priorities and not consistent with hearsay, rumor, and punditry in Washington, D.C. So New York was a disappointment. I was told, actually, that New York could pick up seats. I said, I don't count it that way.
Yeah.
And I do not count it that way. But no, we did not expect to lose 4 seats there. 3 seats that were actually Democratic seats that went bad, and one that was Sean Patrick Maloney. He lost by a half a percentage point.
Yeah.
When the governor lost by like 10 points in his district. Other statewide office holders went down in their percentage in those particular districts as well.
Yeah, it was mind blowing. So, but you think the governorship ended up distracting from the congressional seats?
The fact that they did not address the political concern that was clear early enough had an impact, yeah, on House seats. Let me say this. I'm a former chair of the California Democratic Party years ago. If I want to win statewide, I know what I have to do. If I want to win congressional or legislative seats, I know what I have to do. If I have to want to do both, if I want to do both, then you have to do both. So, for example, if you want to win statewide, what do? You do Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, San Jose, like that. But if you want to win seats in those Democratic areas, those seats are won.
Right. So a choice had to be made.
So in New York, the representation was that they were doing both. But the downside of the governor's race was too much. I mean, if Sean Patrick is winning, is losing by a half a point, and the governor is losing by 10 points in his district, you see what the challenge is. And again, I fully support winning the governor's race, but I did not think it had to be at the expense of the control of the House of Representatives.
In California, you have made a statement on that senatorial seat that is, everybody wants it.
Yes.
Can you just tell our listeners what that endorsement was?
My statement was that if Senator Feinstein decides to seek reelection, she has my wholehearted support. If she chooses not to run, I'm supporting Adam Schiff for Senate. California is a huge, wonderful state, probably the fourth largest economy in the world. 40 million people. Our balance of trade because of agriculture and technology and so many things, our meaning the U.S. balance of trade, much of it springs from California, whether it's movies or produce. And so we need a strong leader in the Senate. Senator Feinstein, in my statement, I spend most of my time singing her praises that she has one of the finest legislative records in Senate history, that she has been a champion on the public safety, in terms, whether you're talking about safety and security, whether you're talking about assault weapon ban or you're talking about Intelligence Committee, where she such a champion as a chair. We want a senator who will continue that strength. Adam Schiff is a person who is the chair of the, until just now when the speaker took him off the committee because he was too effective in his, Adam was too effective in his opposition to Donald Trump, and Kevin was so catering to Mar-a-Lago. But until then, he was chair of the Intelligence Committee. And so from the standpoint of our national security, to the, he sees a nexus between national security and the fact that our security is also measured in the health, education, and well-being of the American people. So he sees that connection between security and economy and kitchen table issues for the American people. I'm very, very excited about supporting him should Diane decide not to run again. She has been remarkable, an icon, a woman in government and politics, just an iconic figure whom I love and respect. But if she decides not to go, I think we need a strong senator, both in terms of the security of our country, the strength of our economy, and the fairness of it all in terms of addressing disparities and the rest. Adam Schiff has done this again and again and on an ongoing basis.
People like Tucker Carlson have spread horrible rumors about you. You have been demonized, as many successful women have. This leads to an actual concrete attack on your family, in your home.
Yeah.
Are you furious? I mean, I'm furious for you, and I'm not you.
Yeah. First of all, they have said, demonized me because I was effective. I'm biggest fundraiser, passed legislation always, but I also give credit to my members. I'm not their unifier. We're unified by our values, and our members are very courageous to do what is needed to be done. So, but because I have an effective record politically, and more importantly, policy-wise, they decided they had to try to take me down, which is sad because that's not what politics should be about. But it is what that it has been about. And that was a plan on the part of the Republican National Committee to do just that. But what's sad for me is that while I'm the target, they went after my husband. And that's really a horrible thing. Take it to a larger place. What I'm concerned about and have been for a number of years is that when I've encouraged women to run for, when I came to Congress, there were 12 Democratic women, 11 Republican women, 23 out of 435. Terrible. So I said, oh, I can't, you know, I'm a former chair of the party. I'm a political. So we have to change that. And Barbara Boxer and others, we mismade a decision to do that. And now we have 90 Democratic women. We certainly want more. The Republicans have gone to maybe 30 or something like that. So they have grown their number too, not the way we have, but they have more. And we certainly want more women on both sides of the aisle. But the fact is, when you talk to women and say that our country needs you, there's nothing more wholesome for our government and our political system than the fuller participation of women in the process. That you will make a tremendous difference. They say back to me, I could never subject my family, because many of them are much younger than I am now, but you know, when they start off, I can't subject my family to the negative attitude. I can't have my children coming home from school crying because somebody said saw something on TV that wasn't true about me. And so that's what concerns me more. Of course, I'm most concerned about what happened to my husband and the threats to me and my family. But again, to what it means in the larger sense to women saying, I just don't know that I can subject my family to this. Now, many have, and they are courageous, and there's much been written and said about threats to members of Congress, men and women, and that's most unfortunate. But I resent the impact of that their negative attitude toward me has had on other women taking the stand. I've had women tell me that after some of the negative ads that have been played against them, people they know will cross the street when they see them coming. And their children will come home crying, as I said. And that's just not what politics should be about. So I've always said, if we want more women in politics, we have to raise the civility and lower the role of money. And we'll get more women to run. And that when women succeed, America succeeds. And I believe very strongly in that.
Is your husband doing better?
Oh, you're kind to ask. He's about a halfway there. The doctor told him about 6 months to be sort of normal. We just went past 3 months, that's 3 more months, and we hope that by then he'll be close to normal. I do enjoy taking him some places because the doctor also said he has to have some things to look forward to. Mm. So we went to the Kennedy Center Honors, and he came to the unveiling of my portrait, and there are different things. But I appreciate your asking. People are always asking and praying for him, and I'm very, very grateful for that.
Thank you so much for all your time. This was so great. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope to see you sometime soon.
I know you. Our dear listeners are very busy, and you don't have time to sort through the hundreds of pieces of punditry each week. This is why every week I put together a newsletter of my 5 favorite articles on politics. If you enjoy the podcast, you will love having this in your inbox every Friday. So sign up at fastpoliticspod.com and click the tab to join our mailing list. That's fastpoliticspod.com. Senator Patty Murray is the senior senator from Washington State. Welcome to Fast Politics, Senator Patty Murray.
Well, nice to talk to you.
Very excited to have you here. You are the president pro temp of the United States Senate. What does that mean?
We call it president pro tem. I think there's a longer way to pronounce temporary or something, but I go with president pro tem.
Very exciting. And what does it mean exactly?
The president pro tem is actually the person that presides when the vice president is not here to do it. There are ministerial duties to it. I opened the Senate this morning as part of it, part of my job. And importantly, third in line to the president. So I have to stay abreast of absolutely everything happening domestically and internationally in case something horrible happens, which we all presume will not. But I have to be ready for that, should it.
How do you get this job?
By being around a long time, to be truthful. Seniority, and my colleagues vote for me to do that.
It's quite cool. So I want to talk to you. You came in, you were elected
in 1992, which was this You're the Woman. You came in on, you know, in a group of women, you have made women's health a big issue. We have just seen the fall of Roe. Explain to me what that has meant to you. I mean, I know what it's meant to me and my mother.
It's just heartbreaking. I did come in 1992. Before I was elected, there were all of 2 women in the Senate out of 100. We've made progress. Actually, when I was elected, we got to be 6, and they called it the Year of the Woman, which seems just kind of crazy. But and, you know, women have become more and more part of the political process of serving in positions, being a voice for their constituents, and obviously making sure that women have a place in our country economically and be able to have their voice be heard and have issues solved in a way that works for them. So in my career, in my lifetime, to see the courts overturn Roe and specifically say to women, you no longer have a choice about your life and your health, it's going to be made by a politician, is just devastating. But I'm not one who just, you know, crawls in a corner. I'm fighting back. And so are women and men across this country. And that gives me hope that we will be able to, when we get the votes and everybody works hard, pass the protections back into law at the federal level.
So marriage was codified by the Congress. I mean, it seems like Roe should be, but clearly, I mean, that's a much heavier lift.
It is right now. But I think what I saw happen since Roe fell is that people who just had that attitude of, well, politics doesn't affect me, that's somebody else, all of a sudden realized it's them. And as that understanding grows and people see what is at risk, I think they will become more actively involved, and we will at some point see Roe codified into law at the federal level. But nobody should think that's easy. That means electing people across the country. It means pushing it, means keeping it front and center, fighting for it day after day. And, you know, we all have to be a part of this.
You had this very interesting reelection where Republicans got very excited and thought somehow they were going to displace you, and they were brutally put in their place. I mean, were you worried at all?
You know, I don't take any election for granted. I believe it's a time where you really have to go out and talk to your constituents, millions of people, tell them what you're fighting for, what you believe in, what you can do as their voice here in Congress. And I did that and put that to work. And of course, the result was that I won in a very big way.
I mean, I remember hearing that and thinking, because, you know, Republicans, I mean, they really were like, we're going to do this. And I was like, no, you're not. But still, I know. So I want to ask you, you really know how the Senate works. Democrats don't hold the Congress, hold the House anymore. But I feel like there's a tremendous appetite for bipartisanship.
You know, Molly, I think that's absolutely right, because I really do think at the end of the day, people understand we have differences of opinion, but they don't want chaos. They actually want their country to be okay. They want to get up every morning, take care of themselves, their families, do their jobs without worrying what the heck is going on in Washington, D.C. and whether it's going to impact them in their lives. So I think people want stability. And the way we do that is to do our jobs here, making sure that we pass our government funding bills in a regular way so people don't have to worry at the end of the year that the government's going to shut down and all that bugaboo, and that they really want us to be here doing our jobs. And I'm kind of excited that the 4 people that are at the top of the most important committee to do that, the appropriations bills, the Republican and Democrat in both the House and Senate, are women. And we come to work every day to get things done. We don't want chaos. We want to do our jobs. We know it's hard work. We don't skip over pieces of it. We don't pretend it's easy. We go to work. And that gives me a lot of hope that we can show this country that we can operate and function within a political climate that, yeah, is sometimes very hard.
Tell us who the people are on appropriations in the Senate. It's you. You're the chair.
Yeah, I chair the Senate Appropriations Committee. My vice chair, Republican counterpart, is Susan Collins. In the House, Kay Granger is the chair, Republican chair, and Rosa DeLauro is her counterpart, the Democratic leader in that side.
We know Rosa DeLauro well because she is New Haven's congresswoman.
Well, there you go.
And has purple hair, more importantly. Will you just tell our listeners, for the people who are like my dad, not that I don't love my dad, what appropriations does?
Absolutely. The appropriations is the committee that decides where and how all the funding in our government goes. Covers everything from defense, non-defense things, from education to NIH research, to agricultural spending, to foreign operations, the whole gamut. It's like your family budget is in front of you. You know, you got to pay your rent or your mortgage. You got to pay for food. You got to send your kids to college. You got to make sure that you got money for whatever sports equipment your kids need. We look at everything within our, quote, country family budget and decide what's going to be the priorities and how we make sure it is funded in a way that works for us. And I always say our budget and spending really is a reflection of our values. What do we want in this country? The values that we want to make sure we're investing in for our families and our communities.
You have this drama with what's happening right now with McCarthy trying to default, Republicans trying to hold the American budget hostage by threatening to default on our debt. What do you think about that?
I think that's horrendous. Look, if you decide you are going to buy a house and you go through all the process and you say, this is what it's going to cost me and I'm going to pay my bill when it comes due, I'm going to go forward with this. You sign it all. And then the first month you get your mortgage bill, you go, oh, I'm not going to pay this. It just doesn't work that way. When we as Congress decide this is where our money's going to go and we sign contracts to make sure that we're paying for what we decided to have, we can't turn around a few months later and say to our to people we owe money to that we're not going to pay the bill. That is crazy. And to use that to hold us hostage, our job to get our appropriations bills, our budget done, the work we need to do, is just playing politics with the nation's credit. That is dangerous, and we can't allow it.
So what happens now? I mean, is there anything that Democrats can do or even that Biden can do? I mean, I feel like Biden has learned a lesson from Obama's experience with dealing with the House Republicans on this, and he's just said he's not going to do it. But I mean, this still could play out very close to the deadline, right?
I would say to anybody who is going to has to who's bought something, pay your bill. I would say it to my country. Pay your bill. Don't get to the time you pay that bill and then say, well, I'm not going to pay this bill unless you whatever. We just can't do that. So I say to McCarthy, to Republicans in the House, and to our country, pay our bills. And then, yeah, if you want to have a debate about where that money should be spent for the following year, what our priorities are, what our budget should be, put it in the place where it's supposed to be. But don't play with our nation's credit. That is dangerous and costly. So I think McCarthy loses in the end if he tries to pay politics with this. Our country does not want to default on our debt. It would be devastating. And I think he has set himself up to have to save face by saying, oh, never mind, which, you know, nobody wants to put him in that position. He's put himself in that position. But just let's do our job. Under Trump, three times, the Republicans voted to pay our bills, to raise the debt ceiling. This is playing politics now, and it's wrong.
Do you feel that having been a preschool teacher has helped you deal with Washington, D.C.?
Oftentimes, I feel like I'm looking at the face of preschoolers. You know, you have to be tough. You have to say, it's my turn to talk. You have to say, you know, it's time to put your mats away. You have to say, we've got work to do. And then there's times where you, you know, really come together and sing a song. But oftentimes within your class, you always have the bully. You always have the person who speaks too much, the child. That's my world.
You've been in the Senate for, I mean, I don't think of 1992 as such a long time ago, but it is. I mean, you've seen a real change in American politics. Can you just talk about that for a minute?
I do see change in that It's much more hyper-politically, I think, than when I first got here. But there was politics when I came in 1992. There was disagreements, but there was also a consensus among Republicans that when you fight for something, at the end of the day, you have to find a compromise. That is how our country works. And finding those people who still understand that that's the job we came here to do is getting very difficult. But I will say to everyone, there are people who understand that though we're elected to fight for what our beliefs is, if we want our country to work, we have to listen to our counterparts, find common ground, and move the ball forward. That's what I try to do every day.
Are you happy that Susan Collins got reelected?
You know, I'm delighted to have Susan as my counterpart on the Appropriations Committee because she shares the value I just talked about. When it comes to getting things done, she came here to get things done. She knows that if we don't pay our bills, if we don't put together appropriations bills, if we don't decide where our spending is going to go, first, we haven't done our job, and B, we're doing a disservice to all of our country because we're not investing in where we need to invest. We've not done our job. She is committed to doing that with me. We've had great conversations. We're working well together. We do disagree on some issues, and that's fine. We know where those are.
Right.
But we find out where we agree. And right now, we agree it's our job to get our job done.
There are some red state senators who have come in basically on very much sort of MAGA, more like congressional campaigns. Are you anxious about working with those people?
Well, I find people who I can work with. There are people who are elected to office today who feel their only job here is to come and say no, 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 no. Well, you know, how do you pass a budget if you're in the majority, if every one of your members in the Republican caucus in the House think that the only vote they can take is no? They're in the majority. They have got to work to pass bills. You can't come here and just say, I'm not doing anything, because your country stops moving. We have a job to do, and I'm hoping we continue to find people who are willing to do it.
Thank you so much, Senator Patty Murray.
Nice to talk to you.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Jesse Cannon.
Molly Jungfast, that kooky, kooky woman from Georgia that we know as Marjorie Jewish Space Lasers Taylor Greene.
Nothing kooky about the slow sliding into fascism, but yes, she does absolutely unequivocally suck.
Listen, don't you talk like you know things, because she knows more than you, buddy, because she's going to tell you.
Oh, no question.
About what CRT really is.
Oh, please do.
Let me let her enlighten you real fast.
Dodaro, can you tell me how much COVID cash went to CRT?
CRT.
Critical race theory in education. It's a racist curriculum used to teach children that somehow their white skin is not equal to black skin and other things in education.
Yeah. No, I do not know that. But I do know that there's provisions that the federal funds generally are not used or supposed to be used for curriculum.
Oh,
it's a state.
Oh, Mr. Dodaro, I have to tell you, in Illinois, that they received $5.1 billion at an elementary school there that used it for equity and diversity. So it's being used for these things. Mr. Dodaro, can you?
$5.1 billion to one elementary school.
You know, I went to her to get Cobb at where she got that statistic. It turns out it was the Gateway Pundit think tank gave it to her.
Yeah.
Just to be clear for the libel suit, that's a joke, people.
There's no Gateway Pundit Institute. It's its own think tank. We're all going to die. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to end up as the Republican Speaker of the House. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today, we're all looking for ways to save. That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and monitors your medical claims as they come in, then flags any hidden errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's healthlock.com.